that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
We're getting together to talk about all the things we used to do. The laughs, the passions, the little Sebastians, the pets we fell into. And we're putting it all in a podcast. Then we'll send it up into the sky. We're calling it Parks and Recollection. Come on, little podcast, spread your wings and fly.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Parks and Recollection. I am one of your hosts, Jim O'Hare, the guy who played Gary, Larry, Jerry, Terry, even Barry from Johnny Karate. And who's the other guy?
Well, I'm your other host. It's Greg Levine.
Oh, Greg, Jim, that's it. Yeah.
Jim, this is, we got to cut to the chase. We have a very special guest here with us. I feel like perhaps the most special actor, comedian, producer, most recently starred in Apple TV's Severance. He's also a fellow podcaster, co-host the podcast You Talking You Two to Me with Scott Aukerman. Nominated twice for the Critics' Choice Award for Best Actor in a Comedy Series for his work on, this show, Parks and Recreation.
This show.
And most importantly for us here today on our episode, we have the calzone-loving, cones of Dunshire creating, accounting pun-making, Leslie Knope-loving Ben Wyatt. We have Adam Scott.
Adam Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, you guys. So good to see you, Jim. So good to see you, Greg.
Hello, sir.
I'm doing great. I'm so glad I'm able to be on the show. I know we've been trying to do it for a while, and I'm so excited.
You are a busy man. It's all good. We're just glad to have you.
Yes.
Well, we're going to get into the episode because people love to hear about individual episodes, and we're doing season four finale. But before that, just because I know I would want to know what happened, you came to the show later. You came at the end of season two. So we had already done, 28 episodes?
28 episodes, yep.
20 episodes. What is it like? Like, how did it happen? How did you end up with us? And what's it like coming into a show that's already doing, you know, it's doing its thing?
Yeah. I was a big fan of the show. I was an avid watcher of it. So getting the call was super weird and incredibly exciting. I was doing Party Down at the time. And we had just finished shooting season two and were waiting to find out if we were picked up for season three. And it wasn't looking good. It seemed like it probably wasn't going to happen. And Mike had sort of heard about that out in the ether that Party Down was in trouble as far as being renewed goes. And so he, being a fan of Party Down, just called me in for a meeting, and I went in and met all the writers and sat down with Mike and just chatted for a little while. And we got along. I mean, Mike's an incredibly easy person to get along with. And then it was a matter of deciding whether or not to do it, which was the easiest decision in the world. The only thing was Party Down wasn't officially canceled yet. So I was in this tough place where we all knew it was going to be canceled, but it not being official, taking another job was really hard. So I remember talking to a contact I had fairly high up at Starz saying, like, if I say Party Down is going to be canceled, if you just don't say anything, that means yes. It was one of those things.
Right.
Because he couldn't say anything. He didn't want to compromise himself, but he was very nice and helped me out and let me know that it was indeed going to be canceled so I could take this job.
Wow. But did you initially audition for Parks when the auditions were first happening?
Did I hear back that? Back in the day, I auditioned. I think it was before there were really roles.
Yeah.
It was just, they were just auditioning people with like, I don't even know what the sides were from.
I actually just pulled up our list of all the people we brought in for the roles, and you came in for Mark officially.
Oh, okay. Okay. Then that's what it was.
But it was all just sides that were written because I don't think the show had been written yet. The pilot hadn't been written yet.
I remember one of my auditions was with Rashida, I believe.
Yes.
And Nick was there.
But obviously you did something in that audition that, you know, between that and then Party Down, which I was also still a huge, huge Party Down fan.
Oh, so thanks, Jim.
I remember when you and Rob first came to the first table read, it was, you know, exciting because, you know, first there's Rob Lowe and he's Rob Lowe. Okay. We all know, you know, been around forever, movies, TV, blah, blah. So that was exciting. But I was super excited for you because of Party Down. So it was,
thanks.
Yeah, that was a big day. But when you first show up for the first table read, were you nervous about it or were you, you know, which you learned quickly, I'm sure we were a pretty relaxed crowd. There was no craziness. It was just an amazing place.
I was very nervous, and I remember driving in and parking, and right when I was parking in that parking garage that's sort of adjacent to our stage there, I remember thinking, oh, I don't have very much time, and I need to walk all the way over to that building, get in an elevator, and go all the way up. And I had timed it so I would get there like 5 minutes early. Mm. And I guess I did, but in the process of parking and everything, it meant I was going to walk into that room exactly at whatever time the thing started, which was a big mistake because I walk in, everyone is already seated, and the room is packed with people like our table reads were. Mm-hmm. And so I was already, that just kind of compounded my nervousness. But as the table reads were, it was an incredibly warm room. And I remember at the end of the table read, I kind of breathed a sigh of relief. And Aubrey walked up to me and passed me a note. And it was like folded up really, really small. And I opened it up. Do you remember the movie, the Scorsese movie, Shutter Island?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you remember in that movie, Leonardo DiCaprio and Mark Ruffalo go to the mental hospital?
Yes.
And I think someone passes them a note.
Mm, yeah.
At the time, it was like this famous moment that just happened in like a big movie. And I'm just trying to remember what the note said. I think it said help.
Oh, I think the note just says run, right?
Oh, that's what it was. That's what it was. Run. That's what the note said. Yes.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So anyway.
Actually, that's the perfect welcome. That's
the perfect welcome from Aubrey.
Yeah.
Everyone was just lovely.
Yes. I you know, I was thinking about how Mike has a story that he had a post-it on his computer that said Nick Offerman or something like that. When he knew of Nick and they had met, and he's like, Nick would be great for something. And I just want him in the ether in my brain to make. And my perspective from the writing side of things is that you were just one of the names that was talked about, right? And was like,
so
oh, Adam.
So were you there when I came and auditioned for it?
I was, yeah.
He fought against you, Adam. He was like, I don't want him, whatever. But thankfully, he had no power, so here we are.
I said, there's no, don't even bother reading him. It's like, let's just go get lunch. But no, the truth is that, and I learned it a lot from working on this show specifically, is that sometimes you bring somebody in who's amazing, and you're like, this person needs to be in our world, but perhaps this role is not the way they need to be in our world. And so they just stick around. And so this is one of those amazing moments of, I think you came in at both the right time on the series and for the exact role you're supposed to be there for.
Yeah,
100%. I mean, completely. And I remember really, really, really wanting the job then when I originally auditioned for it, which is probably part of the reason. I'm sure my audition was off because of that. It's part of the trick of auditioning is, you know, Jim, it's the worst. And if you want it really badly, you're usually leaning in a little too hard in the audition. Yep. And it's this weird middle ground that you have to hit that I was never very good at hitting. But I remember back in, I think it was 2007, I was shooting an indie in Connecticut, like out in the middle of a snowy tundra in this cabin with Naomi and Graham when he was 6 months old, and reading online that there was going to be an Office spinoff that Mike Schur and Greg Daniels were going to do something. And that's all it was. And I remember I was on this HBO show, Tell Me You Love Me, which was a super serious drama. And we had shot a season of it and we're waiting like literally a year till we started another season. And it was just really, a really trying, like when you're on a show, but it shoots once every 3 years, it's really hard to like scrape together car payments or whatever. Yeah, so I remember calling my agent and saying, can you get me off of this show and get me an audition for the Office spinoff?
Wow.
So this thing was always in my mind as something that I really wanted to do. And then it was like a year later that I actually went and auditioned for it for you guys. So there was all this buildup in my mind of this being something that I really felt like I needed to do. And so I'm sure that did not help in the room. But you're right that Ben Wyatt was a much better fit for me and at a much better time to kind of come into the show. It just all felt right.
It's so weird, and I don't, and this isn't no, this is no slight, you know, Paul Schneider began the show that he did the first, you know, two seasons. When I think of the show, and I'm not just saying this because we're talking, I don't think of it without you. To me, you were there from day one.
Oh, which, that's nice, Jim.
But it's just the fact. And yet, you know, Paul was great and all that stuff. But when I think of Parks, I think of all of us, and you are in there in my head from day one. So I think that says something about how easily you fit in. Mm-hmm. It was like so seamless that there you were.
That's very nice. Paul Schneider's an incredible actor. I'm so happy I didn't have to fill his shoes, that it was a completely different circumstance and character and everything, because I wouldn't have been able to. And Jim, also, you were so kind from day one, like at that first table read, came up and chit-chatted. And, you know, like, you're just such a nice, welcoming person, more than I can say for Aubrey Plaza.
Well, that's hurtful, Adam, but okay, we'll move on. Yeah, other than Aubrey. No, as I have said, people are so sick of me saying it. For me, it was 7 years of that. It was seven years of people getting along and laughing and having a good time. And we've all been on shows where that's not the case, where there's weirdness and jealousies and you know, I don't know everything that went on, but from my perspective,
it was great.
I didn't see any of that. And so... yeah, to me, it was just a gift. 7 years of a gift.
Totally.
You know, we should soon jump into the episode we're here to talk about.
Yeah, we should talk about this episode.
I have one more question for you, Adam, specifically about this when you first joined the show. As Jim was saying, like, you guys came in with Rob. The two of you came in the same episode, which I think is also unique to introduce to... new series regulars. I think at the time there was like a, let's see how it works out. Let's bring these people in and let's try the storyline.
Totally.
Something I've been thinking about now rewatching it is there was this intense focus, because it's Rob Lowe, on Rob Lowe joining the show. And he had this very quick romantic storyline with Rashida's character. And I think it allowed your character to kind of, in a way, it was like disarming. It was like the secret. Like, actually, this character is going to have perhaps the greatest arc. He could be the most pivotal character for our main character, Leslie. And I think it allowed, from the writing perspective, for Ben to slowly just become.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Just become who he became at the end of the series. And I'm just curious, for you joining, if there was this sense of that same thing, the pressure's off. I just get to have fun with these people.
Yeah, I really connected with it from the very start. And the character's backstory being this kid mayor who actually really does have ambitions in politics and in public service and is gifted in politics and public service, but had this really tough beginning for entering into politics and this embarrassing backstory that he is ashamed of. And I guess humiliated by. and that's just so great for an actor to have that kind of backstory. And so Mike and all you guys really gave me a real gift with that. And yeah, I think also, you know, I did watch, I think The Master Plan is the first one, and then Freddy Spaghetti is the finale. So I did watch The Master Plan like a few months ago for some reason. I think it was on TV or something. And, you know, that first scene that Amy and I have where we really sit down and talk at the bar, it's really terrific. And it felt this way then, too, that there was just sort of immediately this ease and this connection between Amy and I, where it just felt right. And these characters needed each other, and they had no idea how much, and that they kind of fit together like puzzle pieces. And kind of immediately, though, they don't actually face up to it for a while. But in that conversation at the bar, they just immediately are able to connect. Ben's able to see right into her and see her ambition, exactly who she is. She's taken aback by that. And Benji White, you know, Ben White being this like child mayor, was clearly something she kind of connected to as a little girl.
Right.
So it's really beautifully constructed and written. And on the day, it really felt right and really kind of immediately sort of locked into place, at least for me. And I was quite nervous the first few episodes, just sort of getting on my feet. But as Jim will attest, you know, working with Amy, you're immediately put at ease, and there's just sort of this immediate connection to her and to the material. It was all really really fun and really lovely, and the crew as well was just
the crew is the best.
Really locked in and sweet and hardworking and happy. It was kind of this. I was really grateful that I had landed there.
And it's such a relief as an actor when you get that feeling of, wow, I have found this. I have found who this character is. I know who it is.
Yeah.
And then the writers learn how to write for you because now they're getting to know you.
Right.
And that's so important when they can write for us as individuals.
Right. That's right.
And it just seemed pretty seamless for Ben Wyatt, you and Ben.
Yes.
It seemed easy. Yes. And the other episode, just, I know we got to get into this episode, but just that I am always, people throw at me, they love the anniversary episode where you and I, you know, Ben and Jerry become buddies because Leslie is not available to do the things you have planned for the anniversary.
That's right.
So we dance together. We cook together. We take a carriage ride.
A carriage ride out in front of City Hall.
Out in front of City Hall. Yeah. That was a fun episode.
So fun. Right.
Listeners who have not seen that episode yet, it's kind of like now it's like we're talking about a fever dream, which is like, oh, you joined the show and like you had this scene at a bar and like we're going to have a carriage ride around City Hall.
With Ben and Jerry. Yeah. Was that season 5?
I think it's six.
Yeah.
And we're jumping. I'm just saying, I hear about that episode all the time. And I don't know if you remember
that. That was really fun.
That's so funny.
Adam, but remember they sent us to, we had to learn how to do some ballroom dancing?
We had dance lessons.
We had dance lessons, yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
We had dance lessons. And then, I don't know if you remember this, but when we were, you know, because we were dancing together, and then during one of the takes, I heard a pop.
And that's right, Jim.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Snapped in my calf.
Oh my God.
I ended up on crutches for like a week and a half. Thankfully, it was nothing at all serious. But I remember hearing, and you looked at me like, I heard that.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, that was so gross. It just popped.
That's right.
Yeah. That was fun.
I remember it being more serious than a week and a half, but I'm glad to hear that it was only that. But I do remember seeing you the next day at work and you were on crutches. I was like, holy shit, dude. So
that was crazy.
So then when we actually shot the dance, you were probably uncomfortable or in pain.
Oh, it was tough. Yeah, it pained. But you know, I'm basically a hero, Adam, in many ways. And I got
through it. People throw that word around.
But I think finally
the humble hero. Seen, Yes.
This is the you time see who to
it
is. Use it.
Yeah, they amputated my leg, and by the next week, they had put another one on, and I continued with the show because I'm not a crybaby.
Seamless transition.
Yes.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nexto, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Nexto, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Well, let's get into our episode because we have so much to talk about. And it's a big episode. It's Win, Lose, or Draw. It's the season 4 finale written and directed by Mike Schur and originally aired on May 10th, 2012. And Jim, if you can read a little blurb for us.
I will give you the blurb. It's election day and Leslie is neck and neck with Bobby Newport in the polls. Ben contemplates a major life change when he's offered a new job that would take him away from Pawnee. And April panics after a potential career-ending mishap at the Parks Department.
Mm. We have one Nopes Notes for this ep, which is that when adult film star Brandy Max, which I don't know if everybody knows has four X's in her name, gets an early lead in the election, Leslie comments, "What is this, Italy?" And this is a reference to a Hungarian-Italian porn star who was elected to the Italian parliament in 1987.
Well, who wouldn't know that?
Yeah, exactly. You didn't need to
I know,
say that,
didn't have to tell us that.
Oh, sorry.
We were all right.
No, sorry,
there.
That's a Nopes no. I guess you already know it. Yeah. And let's jump into our episode with our synopsis. Election day is finally upon the good people of Pawnee, and the Nope campaign once again finds itself having to break through roadblocks. With a razor-thin margin between candidates, the Newport campaign is trying to place rigged voting machines around the city, dispensing free candy bar vouchers for Bobby Newport votes, and the sound of a crying baby for votes for Leslie Nope. Meanwhile, at JJ's Diner, Tom briefs the team on the results party he's planning for later that night and the dream he had about getting back together with Anne. Later at a polling place, Ben gets a surprising job offer from Newport's campaign manager, Jennifer Barkley, to work on a congressional campaign in Washington, D.C. So a lot is happening in this in this episode.
I mean, watching this episode and any of the episodes, like I think from like season three on, I don't totally remember, but there is so much happening and it's 21 minutes. The amount of story that is packed into the episode, but it doesn't feel rushed. It's just like firing on all cylinders.
Yes.
It's all working. And if you watch early episodes, I don't know, you guys probably talk about this all the time, but how much less story is packed in there. And for good reason, you're still getting to know the characters and stuff, but now we know everybody, we know exactly what's
right,
what circumstances. There's just so much in here. It's really great.
I've said many times when we've been doing these podcasts that every week I would leave the table read and think, holy crap, they did it again. Because I just kept thinking they're not going to be able to keep up with this pace and these solid storylines and these legit storylines. Because, a lot of shows, they hit a wall here and there or a season here and there that just feels a little wonky. In my opinion, I'm a bit biased, but I don't feel we ever did that. I just think episode after, I was just, how the hell do they do this?
Yeah.
I was always amazed by it. They pack in so much and it's all legit. It's not, it's all good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's almost a sweetness to the simplicity of the early episodes, right? Which is like,
totally.
A gift basket was $35 and Leslie accepted it. I'm like, oh my God. That's like a scene in an episode now.
Yeah, totally.
So there's this little joke which made me laugh. I love rewatching the episodes and being reminded of moments, scenes, bits that I completely forgot. And that is that the election commissioner talks about the tie vote protocol, which is that he says, I will certify the results after all the precincts have reported. A final tally with 1% will trigger an automatic recount. In the event of an exact tie, the seat is awarded to the male candidate and the female candidate is put in jail.
Goes to jail.
It's so good.
That's
great.
And I think that joke actually does double duty, right? It's just a funny joke, but it also just reminds you of like the headwinds that Leslie's up against in a way. And
absolutely. But also it has history to it because we all know Pawnee's really like dirty history, like both with its relationship to the Native Americans that were there. These like archaic, weird laws that are on the books.
Yes.
Magicians. We didn't like magicians. They were demons. Right.
Yes.
There's a lot of things we didn't like.
Yes.
And also later in the episode, when Leslie actually mentioned something about if she loses, she'll have to fight from jail, as if that was going to be what would happen. Yeah, she would end up in jail.
Yeah.
So crazy.
I also was laughing about in Tom's dream, he's talking about that it was him and Drake and the T-Mobile girl were playing Baccarat on a private jet. And I was thinking, who was the T-Mobile girl at this time? But such a specific reference from the early 2010s.
Yeah, I don't remember who that was either.
Me neither.
Oh, we're getting a note that the T-Mobile girl was Carly Fulks, if I'm pronouncing that right. Apologize if I'm not. The spokeswoman for T-Mobile from 2010 to 2013 and known for her iconic pink and black leather motorcycle gear. All right, Carly.
Shout out to Carly.
Yeah, thank you, Carly. Another big thing we like to talk about on this show and we joked about in the writer's room is gifts, parties, and jobs. Adam, I don't know if you know this, but there was this observation made by a writer once that it seems like every episode has at least a gift given, a party thrown, or someone gets a new job.
That's really funny.
I think it's a nice way to talk about the inherent sweetness of the show.
Yeah.
And Ben is incredulous when Jen offers him a coordinating spot on the Ohio reelection bid.
Yeah.
Adam, did you see this kind of twist coming? Did you know going into this that there was going to be a storyline set in D.C.?
I think I did. I'm sure Mike would have told me that we were going to like open season 5 with Aubrey and I in DC. I think that's what it was, that it was like planned out. Mm-hmm. I think I did know. And we thought it was really exciting and be super fun, which it was.
Yeah, because we'll wind up going, like we shot in DC, right?
Oh, totally.
Oh my God, which we'll have to talk about then. We had so many politicians and DC
I know.
Folks.
John McCain was on the show.
Yes.
And McCain, Biden?
Yeah.
Biden, totally.
Michelle Obama? That's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah.
But also to jump back a little, when you are offered that job by Jen Barkley, of course you think she's about to scam you in some way because this is Jen Barkley.
Right.
Played by Catherine Hahn, who is, of course,
the best.
So brilliant and so sweet and lovely and funny and so perfect in this role. And, you know, poor thing hasn't worked since Parks, but, you know, she'll have, you never know. Maybe something will happen.
Yeah, all pulling for her.
Definitely pulling for her.
No, Catherine is so funny. Like when the gift certificate for the candy bar comes out, she's like, I don't see the problem. The dirtiest, most sort of conniving political operator. And so I think her offering the job, yes, it's suspicious, but underneath it is also like, oh, so for the audience at least, it's like, oh, so Ben is good at this. Like this is someone like her who, when all said and done, is a professional, is offering him a job. Like, so there is something, some real kind of talent here as far as his political acumen goes.
Right. It's not just Pawnee good, right? It's not just a town that has a Pert Hapley that Ben can do this.
That's right.
And it's interesting. It makes me think of when we first meet Catherine's character, we meet Jen Barkley, and she's complimentary of Leslie and Ben and what they're doing and the work they've done on the campaign. And then she, at the same time, just beats them on T TV, and it's like, I'm cutthroat. I'm gonna, and so there's something quite disarming about her just in the same, you know, minutes of trying to rig an election.
Yeah, she did respect them, though. She respects their capabilities, but yet she's got a job to do, and she's being paid by the Newport campaign.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I also want to call out, we have Paul Rudd in this episode, too, who is just unbelievable and such a silly clown of a character. And I just laughed so hard watching that when Rudd giggles and goofs off with the boom mic at the end of their press conference. and Amy plays this version of it. She's like an annoyed mom when she says, like, don't touch it. Like, kind of like she's witnessed versions of his stupidity forever. And I just don't have the patience anymore. But I just have to say, don't touch it.
Yeah.
It was so good.
It's so funny because he is her opponent, but he's so dumb, he doesn't even really realize this. And likes Leslie, but even through, like, the debate episode too, I remember him after the debate, doesn't he come up and just be like, hey, what are you guys doing? Like, he wants to hang out.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
He's so dumb.
Yeah, well, Andy mentions he has to, he can't vote for himself. He's pretty sure that's illegal.
Yeah, right.
So he's going to vote for Leslie.
And
you're buddies with Paul, right? You guys knew each other way before this?
Yeah. Paul and I go way back. And so this kind of era of the show was particularly fun and has particularly great memories. Because we were all like, that episode, we're on the bus. It was so much fun driving around. And it's Han and,
that was
and
fun.
Paul and Rashida, Amy, you got it. Like, it was so much fun. That whole bus, all that bus stuff was super fun, right,
Jim? Oh, that was the episode just before this, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so it was the one right before, right?
Yeah, yeah, we just talked about that. Yeah, it was so great.
I remember, totally off topic, but having lunch, and I did not know Catherine until I met her on the show, and we were all having lunch. Remember we shot at that mansion? Like, the bus pulled up to some big mansion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I don't know where the hell we were. And we were just sitting in the backyard, and this happens to me many, many, many times, and I actually love it, where I'll be sitting with a group of people and think, how is this happening? And because I was such a big fan of Catherine's, that was one of those moments. Like, how am I having lunch and just sitting and chatting with Catherine Hahn? Like, and then, you know, and then Amy and you. And anyway, I actually love those moments because it means I'm not jaded. I haven't lost the excitement of the biz.
Totally.
Yeah. You're like observing your life. You're like both there and you're like watching it. Like, look, look at this.
It's almost like there's a ghost of you in the corner of the room.
Yeah. But I love it. And she couldn't have been, oh my God, what a sweetheart. What a sweetheart.
Well, let's continue on with the episode.
On that note,
wrapping things up at campaign headquarters. Chris Traeger seems to be back to his old self, as he describes. I couldn't believe this. I couldn't believe it watching it, that this scene made it. His wild one-night stand with Jen Barkley, telling Anne about it. Meanwhile, at City Hall, April has gone into a full-fledged panic attack after accidentally erasing every file from every computer in the Parks Department. And back at the voting precinct, Ben tells Leslie about his big job offer, sending Leslie reeling and upstaging what she thought would be the happiest moment of her life, casting a ballot for herself in the city council election.
I love that moment where she gets to vote for herself. It's
so awesome.
Lovely. Yeah.
I totally agree.
The thing about Amy, we all know her as a comedic actress, but she can bring the emotion. She can bring the whole thing. And I just,
absolutely.
First of all, I love, you know, because I'm, you know, labeled comedy guy, it's so nice when you get the opportunity to do more than just what people expect. And boy, did she nail that. Mm-hmm. Like, if you didn't get chills watching her do that and see her emotion, then you're dead. You're just dead. And
this might jump too much into the minutia of the show, but maybe that's interesting, which is that, you know, The Office was this great mockumentary that appreciated, I think, the documentary idea that someone was making this. And so the idea of spy shots or catching a character when they didn't know they were being filmed and they forgot they're being filmed in this fake documentary was very important. So you'll see some of the people in their most real moments in spy shots.
We always loved the spy shots, like through the blinds of the office. Like, I think our first kiss is through there. But we always liked spy shots because it makes your acting seem better.
Yeah, there's you guys, there's probably no camera in the room with you at that point, right?
Right. So you look, just like a visual obstruction just makes acting look seem better. Like it increases your acting ability by like three.
Yeah. And this is embarrassing to say, but sometimes I would have to say, where the hell is the camera? Like, sure. I didn't even know where it was. And a good actor should probably always know that. But,
well, you're not a good actor.
I am not a good actor. So there we go.
But I bring up the spy shots because I think something about this scene is really interesting, which is the camera's there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The camera's in there with her. And so we rarely get to see. It was like it's a very close camera in a tight voting booth of Leslie in perhaps the most significant moment of her entire life, this longtime dream.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting that normally in this show, we wouldn't be seeing that person so vulnerable and so close up. So that just struck me.
Yeah, yeah. So we should hit on Chris's...
oh, please.
Well, what would you call it? His...
his romp.
Stamina?
How many times?
Several times, and then more times, and then a couple more times, and then one more time. That would put him at 10.
That's right.
That would put him at 10 rounds in one evening.
Yeah.
I can see Chris Traeger. I mean, it's not surprising for Chris Traeger that he's able to do this. I could see Jennifer just being like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Let's just keep doing this and then leave.
Yeah. I'm in the zone. Let's go. Sure.
Yeah. With anyone else, you'd go, oh, that's just so stupid and ridiculous. But this is Chris Traeger. It could have happened. He is the perfect physical specimen. It could have happened.
It's probably wearing Bumbleflex at the time.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Exactly.
you know, I also love this little beat, this little story with Andy and April. There's something very simple. It was one of those things where we just, you know, they're series regulars. They're important, but there are big stories happening for other characters right now. And the culmination of 22 episodes of a election storyline, which is going to take a lot of the, you know, the weight of the ep. And so we just put them back in the office together in a way kind of where their romance began. And it's an episode that we'll talk about very easily gets summed up with Donna's help, but it just puts these two people at a crossroads pretty much to help set up some storyline for the next season. Mm-hmm. And I love how when Andy comes in and he sees April in this state after her big gaffe, he's like, first of all, you did the right thing by hiding under this table. And then he stumbles under it and he's like, he matches her energy scurrying under there. And I just think there was something very sweet. There's this.
Greg, what storyline were we setting up for next season? The Andy pursuing being a police officer?
Yeah.
But then what ends up happening? He doesn't end up doing that, right?
He does. He goes through, I think, the process, but doesn't actually decide to become one.
Was the original idea that Andy would end up being a cop?
I don't think there was ever a conversation at the time, at least when we were writing this, that we will build to that happening for sure.
It was just like, let's...
Yeah. I mean, in this season, Andy had gone to school for a little bit, and there's this idea of perhaps an evolution in his character going beyond just you're a shoeshine guy to you're a stand-in assistant to you know. So I think the idea was to have a storyline that would be fun to pursue for him.
Yeah.
But would offer a great opportunity for just other comedy. Also, when you have cops, it was fun because we know that Ben has this deep stress around cops, so it just becomes a comedy game.
Nothing better than Ben around a cop.
Yeah,
that's nothing better than that.
Ben didn't like cops.
Terrified. And which is so funny because Ben is, I can't imagine he ever does anything wrong, or at least, you know.
I know. It's
to get in jail.
Pretty law-abiding, generally.
He seems like a pretty law-abiding guy, and yet just terrified.
Yeah, and putting Andy in any situation, any structured situation, is kind of instant comedy anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Exco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience.
Acura wins Daytona!
And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
Let's go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Listeners, and Jim knows I'm a major West Wing fan. And
oh, God, me too.
And, you know, the series is just laden with little either direct call-outs, like the Live Ammo episode being a direct quote from a West Wing ep, to Ethel Beavers. Original, we've, you know, first found her on an episode of The West Wing. All of this to say is that Leslie's two speeches, it reminds me of the West Wing election storyline, and Sam is shocked that Toby wrote two speeches for Bartlett's re-election. And then Toby is just like in utter shock that he wouldn't have, and they have him go outside and spit, turn around and spit several times.
Yeah, turn around and spit, yeah.
Yes, yes. So this will come back, but I wanted to reference it because I think it's just another little moment of like, oh, this was, I think, the kind of the spiritual cousin to West Wing in many ways.
Yeah, 100%. What's the, when Brad Whitford was on the show, we had the napkin behind him.
Yes.
And it said his character for Pawnee, right?
Pilner for Pawnee, yeah.
Pilner for Pawnee, right.
Yes, yes.
So cool. As a West Wing fanatic myself,
yeah,
being in that scene was a very big deal.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes.
Because Mike Schur was also a huge fan, right? Mike Schur is just super fan.
Mike and I actually were guests on the West Wing Weekly together a few years ago.
Yeah, nice.
Well, let's go back into our series then with more storyline, which is that with the election results beginning to roll in, Jerry returns to the results party and panics, realizing that after spending so much time handing out Nope campaign leaflets, he has run out of time to vote and concoct the election.
He was so proud because he goes, I've never handed out this many before. Like, damn, I did it.
Yeah,
and then Ron.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get back to the synopsis, but it reminds me of when Jerry was stuffing the mailers. Like, it's just pride in the work of business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's government work. Got to do it.
Meanwhile, Ben's new job offer hangs heavy on Ben and Leslie's minds and takes Leslie to a boxing gym to burn off some election night jitters and convinces Leslie to tell Ben to stay, while Ben seeks guidance from Ron, who also advises Ben to stay. Back at the Newport campaign offices, Chris tracks down Jennifer to try and form a deeper connection, but instead the two end up hooking up again, this time in the supply closet. I want to talk about Ron's scene with Ben because, one, you know it's a busy episode if Ron's first scene, I think his first line of dialogue, is the second scene of Act Two.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think
so.
Yeah,
you're right. You're right. It's not till later. Yeah.
But I think there's just this lovely dynamic between these two characters. And I actually don't think we see a lot of this version of Ron with Ben.
Yeah. Nick and I were talking about it recently, actually, that we didn't get a ton of just Ron and Ben. And maybe that's good because the few times we do kind of get paired off and have scenes together, it's special and has a real kind of unique flavor to it just because those two characters are so defined and so different. But yeah, I love this scene. And I love the episode that Nick directed, I believe, where we go to the winery and get drunk and then end up like on a walkabout with Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
I think that's season 6, maybe. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anytime there's a scene with Offerman, it's just a treat.
And I love in that scene when you guys do the shot of Lagavulin, your reaction.
Yes.
I mean, as an actor, is just brilliant. Yes, yes. I mean, it's just so funny. Such a great response.
Yeah, some comes out, right?
Rewatching West Wing recently, I wonder if I nipped that from Brad Whitford from when he takes a sip of old coffee and it just dribbles out of his, yes. rather than spitting it out, you just open your mouth and let it fall out,
yes,
which
yes.
is what I did. I wonder if that's where I got it. Anyway.
So great, though. It's so great. But one of the scenes when we're at JJ's, and I noticed this in the rewatch, you actually take a bite of the pancakes.
I noticed that
too. That is such a risky thing to do.
I know.
As an actor.
I know. It really
is. And it really stood out to me because you don't know how many takes you're going to do. You could walk in there super hungry, and by take, 10, you're miserable.
I know. It's a dumb thing to do, but I always appreciate it when I see people actually eating on camera.
I do too.
Because I catch fake eating all the time. I'm like, come on.
They're messing with their knife and fork. Yeah. And they're a little bit. Yeah. No, I totally
agree. Or you
agree.
See them like working with the food for a while and then they take the bite and it's like a piece of lettuce.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like, yes. I hate that. It takes me out. It takes me out.
It
I
does
totally
me
agree.
Too. And that, by and large, people probably don't know this, but I would like to think I was aware of where the camera was, so took a big bite because I figured it would be on camera, but I have no idea. Maybe I was starving. But the good thing about Parks is we were never shooting. I mean, it's not like we did traditional coverage, so
right.
I may have only needed to take that bite like 8 times or so. I don't know. I don't
right.
remember.
Who knows? Yeah. But it's risky. It's a, yeah.
It really
it wasn't
is risky.
Just, you did, it wasn't a nibble. It was a right. bite.
It was funny. A big bite.
Yeah.
It's funny to think of like a Succession episode where like the entire 60 minutes is like around a dinner table.
I
and
know.
How many fake bites must have happened in that
I
moment.
I know.
And I think also about how Chris Pratt, our friend before Star-Lord version of Chris Pratt began, would just happily eat.
Oh,
yeah.
Happily.
He talked about it too. I was going to say that Pratt would just eat full on and just push it all down and have no problem with it.
Yes.
When we were eating ribs at the dinosaur restaurant, Jurassic Fork. So we're eating the ribs during the scene, and everyone's being careful because, you don't know what you're going to end up eating. And then we break for lunch. He eats a full lunch, and he comes back, and he goes right back at those ribs. He was so impressive.
Of course.
So impressive.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So in our synopsis, with the polls closed, Leslie trails Bobby Newport by 21 points, leading to the Nope campaign demanding a recount. While the team waits for the recount numbers to come back, Leslie slips away to think, and Ron finds her sitting alone in the city council chambers where the two have a heart-to-heart. Back at the Parks Department, April and Andy brainstorm new career paths in the wake of April's misdeed until Donna shows up saving the day by revealing she's been backing up all of the Parks files for the past 10 years due to Jerry deleting all the files all the time. I also want to call out, there's this great moment when the deal that Jen offers Leslie and Ben to stop the recount to where she's like, I'll give you Joe Biden's home phone number. And like, it goes from Amy doing this so well, like, there's nothing you could give us. I'll give you Joe Biden's home phone. Now, hang on. That's interesting.
Yeah. And she loves her Joe Biden.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so funny.
It's the very, what is it? The next episode, technically the season premiere of next season that Biden is in. Am I wrong about that? Or is that later?
It's later.
Yeah.
But Ben going to D.C. is going to like trigger. It's like the catalyst
right.
for what will eventually
That's
get us
what
that.
It is, yeah.
Right.
But I just love that in front of her soulmate, she's still willing to be like Joe Biden. Doesn't even mention her sexual attraction to him, but Joe Biden cuts through all of the, even her biggest
dream. 100%.
Yeah.
And also his home phone number, what are you going to do with that? Like call his home, that's ridiculous.
Of course you will.
Of course he would. Give everything up to call him at home.
It's so funny. So when Bobby wins at the end of the second act, I don't know if you guys felt this way watching it, but I think you know deep down that things are going to turn around for Leslie, right? Things tend to work out for her. You want things to work out for her. You want her to win, right? And at the end of the day, Leslie is more upset about letting her friends down than she is about not making it onto the city council. I mean, Ron's second scene in the episode is talking to Leslie.
Yeah.
He's offering her advice this time. He's the guru of tonight's episode. And Leslie says, for the past 6 months, my friends have worked so hard. If I lose, I'll never forgive myself. You deserve to win. Don't you love that?
That's so Leslie. It, you know, she has her ego and all this other stuff, but she ultimately, it's about her friends and the people. She knows what everybody did for her, mm-hmm. how hard they worked.
Yeah.
And letting them down is worse than not winning this election. And that is just so Leslie. Those are the moments that, you know, people are always like, there's so much love in this show. Well, that's the perfect example of why people love the show.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And we get our episode title in this scene too, right? Where Ron says, that's what you do when you care about someone. You support them, win, lose, or draw.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't even realize that.
I love hearing an episode title. I love hearing it. One other little bit of minutia, when Andy and April are brainstorming jobs, they're also brainstorming places to live. You know, Mike Shore was doing an interview with Vulture back in 2012, around when this episode aired. And he's talking about how he went to Chris Pratt and said, hey, we have to write some real responses that people are going to care about where April and Andy would want to live. And he said Winterfell was his idea because he was a huge Game of Thrones fan. But that Pratt came up with the listing of all the places in the song Kokomo.
Uh-huh.
And I guarantee so many people froze it and read each and every one of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because I would have done that in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, guys, we got to jump back into our synopsis because we're coming to the conclusion of this episode. The recount results are almost in. And when Ben finds Leslie to bring her back to the party, she presents him with a miniature Washington monument. She tells him he has to take the job in Washington, acknowledging the sacrifices he's made for her and explaining it's time for her to return the favor. And then interrupts them with the actual recount results, and it's still 21 votes, but now they're in Leslie's favor, meaning she's won the election. As the balloons drop and Mousetrap plays in the background, Bobby Newport gladly concedes.
Really gladly concedes. He is thrilled.
Ben gives Leslie her acceptance speech, admitting he never actually wrote a concession speech for her. Leslie presents an impassioned acceptance speech, imploring the people of Pawnee to embark on a new journey together, and proudly adds her photo to the wall of all male city council members. Meanwhile, because if that wasn't enough, Jerry is relieved his lack of voting didn't cause Leslie to lose the election, but formally accepts Jennifer's job offer, and Ron turns down the assistant city manager position.
By the way, we shot all that, all the sort of the big speech and us backstage, like getting all the results with Amy and Rashida and stuff. That was all shot at this like hotel over on Vineland. That's just this innocuous. Every time I drive by it, I think of these scenes. Anyway, I drive by it all the time.
The Beverly Garland, I think it is.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I shouldn't say this, but I went to a magic convention there when I was in middle school.
Yeah, you shouldn't
not the
say
gathering.
That,
no. Magic.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say like 2 weeks ago.
No, but if they would, I would. I'm free.
I would too, actually. That sounds
thank
great.
You. Okay, thank you, Adam. Let's talk about another sweet, great gifts, parties, and jobs. Leslie gives Ben a mini Washington monument in a box.
Yeah.
It's like this, it's this twin to the Nope 2012 box that kicks off this campaign. And, you know, a joke has to be made about, I don't know how you got a Washington monument at midnight on Tuesday. And she's like, I have 50 of them in my office. But talk about that moment. I think it's a very special scene between the two of them.
Yeah, I think it is. And it kind of goes to the depth of Mike and the writers of their work. It's sort of a twin moment, like you said, to the earlier moment at the beginning of the campaign. But it's also sort of an answer to him not writing the other speech. Like I remember when I read that moment when he says, I didn't write it. I just thought like, oh my God, like all I have to do is just say the line and it does everything. It's one of those, it's like with great writing, you just don't get in the way of it and it makes you look good. And it's just kind of beautifully rendered. But I think it just adds a lot of depth and texture to the relationship between these two. And it's impossible not to root for them and be on their side. It's really lovely. And it was so much fun doing all this stuff with Amy. We really loved doing these scenes together, or at least I did. I'm just kidding. We had a great time.
Amy's been in therapy over it for years. But as long as you enjoyed it, that's all that matters.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that, I mean, it goes back to what you were saying, that you and Amy from the first scene at the bar, that first like dual scene, that there was this chemistry, and there's chemistry between people you can't fake. We felt it when we were watching Chris and Aubrey in Hunting Trip when they're stuck in the office. Totally. And you're like, those two characters make sense together. Those two actors make sense together to execute that. And it just speaks more to what we're talking about. You were meant to be part 100%. Of this world.
Yeah, and that proposal scene at the house will go down as one of the all-time great scenes. God. There was the everything about that scene worked. Everybody was rooting for you guys. And your performances, of course, were perfection. They're just the perfect couple.
So fun. It was all so fun.
All right. We have one last bit of a synopsis, in the tag. As the party winds down, a drunk Anne tells an even drunker Tom that she wants to get back together, and the two agree to move in together. Because that's going to last long.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, April, realizing that most of Andy's dream jobs were related to law enforcement, suggests he becomes a police officer. The long night draws to a close when Leslie rallies the troops for victory waffles at JJ's Diner. Here's Jerry getting sold out at the very end.
Jesus.
Guys, it's so funny. Ron sells Jerry out. It's like, it's just, the episode's over. We don't need any more. We've done all the jokes. Everything's good. Ron says Jerry forgot to vote proudly. So he's very proud to say it. Leslie, damn it, Jerry. The very last line of the very last episode of the fourth season is damn it, Jerry.
Yeah. And the fact is, like you said, there was no reason for Ron to do that.
No.
It meant nothing other than, well, I'm going to stir it up. And I'm going to say, Jerry forgot to vote.
Yes.
And of course, you know, during the seasons, we hear a lot of damn it, Jerry's, mostly from Leslie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, I'm looking at my clock and I see that we've spent so much time and like more than an hour talking to Adam. And that's because we could talk to Adam forever because...
Days and days and days we could do this.
And a good portion of it talking about the West Wing.
Yes. Big which jump. Just means you and I need to talk about the West Wing.
That's right.
More. And magic, apparently. But, you know, this is like this is Parks family. And it's so great to have you here as we recollect on our favorite little show. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks, you guys. And I would love to come back if there are other episodes you would want to have me come and chat about the West Wing.
100% would love that. Please, you kidding?
No, but thank you. This is such a great show and I appreciate you having me. I really miss you guys and I miss everyone at the show and miss the show. So,
yeah.
Me too.
It was really nice watching it again too. It makes me sad, but it's also very, very happy.
We loved having you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks,
Greg. Say hi to Naomi and the kids.
I will, for sure.
All that good stuff.
Bye, Adam.
Bye, guys.
Buddy.
Take care.
Well, Jim, we did it. A whole season of the show.
Another season.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
The end of season four. Huge. Amazing. What a way to end with Adam. We're about to jump into season five. We now have Leslie as a city council person. We have Ben
is off to Washington
to
with
DC.
Aubrey.
We don't even know about April. Yeah, that's a big tease for things to come, right?
Oh, that's true. I jumped it.
Yeah. But hey, that's just going to tease you, listener, who's listening to this while watching the show for the first time, and those who've watched it forever, that we have so much to talk about. And I can't wait to jump into season five with you, Jim.
Me too. We have fun, people.
We have fun. And I'm not just paid to say that.
No, I am, though. You are paid to say that.
That's
yes, I am paid.
By me. Yeah. Well, everyone listening, thank you. Thank you for listening. Please text this episode to your group chat. Start more group chats with people and text them this too. That'd be awesome. You should talk to your friends and family and strangers. Just get their numbers and tell them about the show.
Anybody you see.
You want group strangers together to form a group chat with them to text them about this episode. 5-star reviews wherever you're listening. Again, a thank you to Adam Scott, who was with us, and from all of us here at Parks and Recollection. Goodbye from Pawnee.
Bye-bye now.
Parks and Recollection is produced by me, Lisa Berm, and engineered by Joanna Samuel. The podcast is executive produced by Jeff Ross, Adam Sachs, Colin Anderson, and Nick Liao. Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn are our talent bookers, along with assistance from Maddie Ogden. Our theme song is by Mouse Rat, a.k.a. Mark Rivers, with additional tracks composed by John Danick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Parks and Recollection.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like.
Next, don't give it to you.
How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. Ready to be a part of it?
Let's go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.